This is PCJ Radio International.
On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Hello there and welcome to the program. Now imagine this, you're a television executive, you're sitting in your office, somebody calls you up and says, look, we can get you 1 billion television viewers. Well, if you were in Europe, you'd probably say that it's impossible. If you're in the United States, also impossible. Australia, never will happen. But there is one television audience in the world which is the largest television audience, and that is the People's Republic of China. Central China Television, or CCTV, is the largest television network in the world. In China alone, they have nearly 14,000 employees. There's a new book about CCTV and its history. It's called 2 Billion Eyes, The Story of China Central Television. It's written by Ying Zhu, a professor from the Department of Media Culture at the University of New York in the United States. She speaks next to Richard Ady. His first question to her is, how much freedom does CCTV have?
It depends. And obviously, the topics that would put, you know, the party leadership in a negative light would not be covered by CCTV news.
So you're talking about individuals?
Individuals. For instance, the New York Times covered the massive amount of fortune amassed by the top leaders, right? News like these would not be covered by CCTV.
Yes, the former premier, his family, Wen Jiabao, had a huge, it turned out, had a huge fortune. And CCTV didn't go anywhere near it, is that right?
That's right. It wouldn't dare to.
So how does that work in practice? Because I'm wondering if there are essentially journalists pushing to do stories and censors telling them they can't, essentially within the same organization.
Yeah, it's a delicate dance, and so it's constant negotiation, and this gets to the heart of the issue concerning control and censorship in Chinese journalism. And so over the years, the party has tried to relax its grip because it started to do a little more sophisticated PR campaign. And knowing that strict censorship would not sit too well. So over the years, while it loosens its control, it really downshifted the burden of censorship onto each individual production teams and individual journalists.
Mm. And it does, I suppose, illustrate better than anything else the paradox at the heart of this organisation. It has to do three things. So it has to bring news and, I suppose, Chinese culture to that massive audience that it has. It's still required to be sometimes a sort of mouthpiece for the party. And it has to make money. It has commercial imperatives that it must meet.
Yes. The state and the market have pretty much formed an alliance to advance the kind of programs that are both ideologically inoffensive or politically correct and also commercially successful, which CCTV is required to deliver. And so the end result is frequently a sanitized version of entertainment program and also politically safe news programs. Mm.
But you spoke to the program makers, you spoke to the journalists. Is there a sense of frustration at them feeling that they either have to hold themselves back or that they are being held back?
Well, absolutely, absolutely. You know, however cautious in their deliberation to me, and you can sense this, the kind of depression, frustration is quite rampant among CCTV's news practitioners.
But there was a big, important event. You talk about the earthquake in Sichuan, I think it was in 2008. Now, that was a kind of redefining moment for their news coverage, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, it was. It was, and this was the first time CCTV reported this major disaster with speed and with frankness. essentially, this becomes a milestone in CCTV's development. The very swift reporting was in sharp contrast to the habitual cover-up of the past. As we all know, that domestic disasters of any sort used to be highly guarded secrets by the very macho and militant state in fear of projecting a weak national image. And so the speed and frankness of this earthquake report by CCTV is very unprecedented, surprising everybody, including Western media, especially in light of the fact that during the run-up to the Olympics, that was in 2008, the Chinese media had been tightly controlled and packaged by the government. So it was a delightful surprise when it happened.
And did covering that earthquake, that terrible tragedy in Sichuan, actually permanently change the approach of their journalists and news part of the organization?
I wouldn't say permanently changed it. It's temporarily CCTV had this window of opportunity to act upon their journalistic instinct, professional instinct, to do this kind of reporting. And the window of opportunity was short-lived. I think, several things contributed to the coverage, to this kind of very swift coverage at the time. You know, by 2008, disaster reporting had gradually become less of a taboo because of the rapid flow of information across the national border. And there's no way you can block information from flowing in and out.
Mm.
10 years ago, the SARS cover-up of 2003 was disastrous. It turned the citizens away from the state-run media as they desperately sought out alternative and overseas news sources. So the Chinese state came to the kind of realization that too much information management or censorship could turn a natural disaster into a credibility crisis. So they were mindful of this.
So when it came to Sichuan, because, a lot of the disaster of it wasn't just the massive earthquake, it was things like the slowness of rescue efforts and the shoddiness of construction, especially of schools, that resulted in so many children dying. How critical was CCTV able to be about those things it was finding out?
It was difficult for them to get to the heart of these issues or the various factors that had led to the building collapse at schools within earthquake boundary. So in this way, its coverage, even though, however speedy and frank, it did not really go all the way to these real sensitive issues. So it really still held itself back.
Now, I want to ask you about a program that used to be on CCTV and it isn't anymore. It's News Probe, which was a nighttime TV current affairs show, kind of created in the mold of 60 Minutes, and this is back in the 90s, and it had four guidelines. Now, one of them was a spirit of questioning, perspective of equality, a sense of balance, and this is the one that I think will slightly flummox journalists in America or Australia, and that is a sense of equilibrium. Now, what did that mean?
It means that, yes, you can report critically about certain events, but the end, result or end goal, the purpose of being critical is to bring in, positive reinforcement. In other words, criticism is not to provoke discontent, but to ultimately bringing in an order and to reinforce the national unity. So that's what equilibrium means in this context.
And for a while, the program, the show did pretty well, didn't it?
Yes, it did. The goal was to do more in-depth news stories, bring in objectivity and so on. And it did extremely well. But once the criticism pushed certain hot buttons of the party establishments, both the local establishments and the central party establishment pushed back. So News Probe had to rein in itself.
And that was that eventually, wasn't it?
That's right. And so it changed its mandate from doing in-depth investigative program to use the term by its producer, Zhang Jie, to do an enlightenment program. which means that, you know, the journalism or the functions of News Probe is to enlighten Chinese people about citizenry.
How globally ambitious is CCTV? I mean, its purpose really until now has been about, you know, the domestic market. But is it now looking to expand itself into a global player?
Oh, yes. This has been a long-term planning. It seeks international influence and recognition, and the two things that, you know, might not come easily. And the clumsy propaganda effort gradually evolved into a more sophisticated PR campaign to repair, you know, CCTV's tarnished international and China's tarnished international image, which, of course, remains for the most part negative still. But the irony is that CCTV is aggressively covering international news. What is missing is its very own news. It's news about China that CCTV International continues to be on a very short leash. It cannot deliver to the world that the news about China that people actually crave for. And so in this way, the value of CCTV remains questionable.
That was Professor Ying Zhu from the Department of Media Culture at the University of New York in the United States. She's the author of a brand new book called 2 Billion Eyes, The Story of China Central Television. And she was speaking there with our good friend Richard Ady. The book is published by The New Press. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Well, just over 2 weeks ago, our frequency manager, Victor Gunatelica, put me onto something rather unique and rather special, a Perseus. Now, if you don't know what a Perseus looks like an old-style 14.4K modem, but it's more than that. You connect an antenna up to it, connect it to your computer, and basically it works as a radio, but it uses your computer as, let's say, the front panel of the radio, so you can change frequencies and turn volume down and put antenna gain up and everything else. Now, the other nice thing about Perseus is that you could connect up to other ones around the world. Now, this got me thinking because I'm sure that there's some of you out there who don't know about it. So joining us right now is Victor Gunatelica, all the way at his home in Colombo, Sri Lanka. And Victor, let me begin by asking you, what exactly is Perseus for people out there who know nothing about it?
Well, it's a new design. If you think of the traditional radio, it's a software-defined radio, so that the whole thing is in a little box, like the good old TNCs or router-sized thing, which you feed into the computer, and you see your receiver on your computer screen, and you control and do everything from your computer. So in that respect, it's quite different from a traditional radio, but you hear, you see exactly what you'll see in front of you if you are using another radio. Only thing is, the features, all those things are on your computer screen, and without a tuning knob, you can tune the frequencies up and down, go up and down with the mouse, or with the up and down keys of your keyboard at the computer. So everything is controlled with your computer, and even a recording program which you have on your computer can easily record anything, and no wires connecting and all that, and you'll have a one-to-one clear recording. So it's new technology, but you hear the same thing that you heard right over the years on your traditional communication receiver.
Now, here's a question that I can think that some people are asking right now who are not familiar with it, because we all know that computers can generate a lot of noise that you can hear on shortwave if you have a shortwave receiver that's too close to a computer. What about with Perseus?
Well, I haven't had any problem about the computer interfering, like noise or crackle and things like that, or a constant rumble or a hum. Of course, if you use an external hard drive, it tends to create a problem. So, but basically, I haven't had any problem with the Perseus. I'm using a Macintosh, of course. At the same time, we have a second Perseus, which is on a very simple, fairly old microprocessor type of thing. And this is a PC. So PC, I have no problem. Mac, no problem. So I don't think it's a problem at all for noise generated from your computer.
Now, what is the sensitivity like? Because the Perseus is not cheap. When I was looking around online, I saw secondhand ones for between $300 and $400, and new ones that were starting at $700 all the way up to $900, depending on the retailer. So what is sensitivity like?
I find the sensitivity on par with any other communication receiver I have. I have a Drake R8, I have an ICOM R71, I have the old, good, sturdy old valve-type radio and simple Sony ICF-2010 or the 901 and the Texan. Absolutely nothing to complain. And in fact, leaving all these receivers aside, I tend to use the Perseus almost 100%, other than for my traditional monitoring, which is on a simple radio, naturally, what simple people would hear if they tune to RPCJ or Happy Station.
Now, let's talk about the Perseus itself. So what you're saying is you connect an antenna to this little box that looks like an old-style 14-4 modem. Then
yes.
It connects up to the computer, and you run the software, and that's it. Now, the unit itself, it's capable of picking almost every part of the broadcast dial. What about DRM?
Yes. Now, DRM, at the moment, the Perseus model that is on the market has DRM capability, but you have to have the software separately installed on your computer. Now, I'm using the very popular Dream software for DRM, and on my Perseus, I tune to the DRM signal. There's a separate button, like for instance, USB or SSB CW. Similarly, there is a button you click for DRM, and you click in, you bring in your Dream software, and you have your DRM signal. I understand a new model is to be introduced sometime later this year. Of course, this is I cannot confirm it, where Perseus manufacturer intends to incorporate a DRM software within the Perseus, and this will enable us, even on a remote receiver, on a remote Perseus, to listen to DRM. At the moment, it is not very easy to pick up DRM on a remote Perseus receiver because the software is separately installed on your computer.
One of the things that I enjoy actually about it, I mean, I've only been using it, the software, for about 2 weeks, which, by the way, I think you've just made me want to spend a whole lot of money to actually get a Perseus myself. It would be interesting to have one here, you know, operating out of Taiwan. But one of the things that I enjoyed about it is that it is actually incredibly easy to use. To connect to a different Perseus, you click one button and then you click another button, and it can open up a map, and it shows all the Perseus units that are in use all around the world. So, for example, for Germany, you see Germany, and then you see one, but then you zoom in to Germany, and then you see others popping up.
Yes. I think at any given time, my experience has been that there are about 40 to 60 Perseus receivers online, and you can see them where they are spread out on your map that comes up on your computer. So all you got to do is to click with your mouse on any one of those that you select, and you bring it in. And just as you say, just click twice and another button, and you are there. And the great thing is, if you are a city dweller plagued with noise, or even if you don't have your shortwave radio, for 60 days, if you download the software, you can have access to any receiver that's online and receive your favorite shortwave signals, whether it's just SWLing or DXing. Now, I have people tuning into my Perseus almost back to back, hardly any time that it's free. People from the US and from Australia, you name it, they come in. All you got to do is to have an internet connection and you log into my Perseus or the any other one. And you have absolutely free of charge the possibility of traveling to another location virtually and listening in. And, you know, one thing I love about the Perseus network is when PCJ, our happy station, goes on there on Sundays, 13:30 to 14:30, while the program is going on, I'm clicking on various Perseus receivers all over the world to see how our signal is being picked up.
Well, this leads me to a question, Victor. Is Perseus something that, let's say, other international broadcasters use to monitor how their signals sound in various parts of the world? I mean, is it being used for that purpose?
Well, it is being used, but I don't know whether it's being used, very honestly, I don't know whether it's being used widely, because at the same time, I must mention the remote monitoring system of the IBB, the VOA, where my boss, Bill Whitaker, runs it, and it is open to anybody, broadcasters, to schedule their time slots and listen. So a lot of engineers do use that, and sometimes they schedule a weekly schedule of 15 minutes a day, every hour. And IBB, if you go to the IBB homepage, monitoring homepage, you'll see the whole thing there. So the Perseus, yes, people are starting to use it more and more, professional people in broadcasting, as well as the old and still functioning very well IBB system.
Victor Gonatelica, thank you very much for joining us. We'll have more on our website about Perseus. Victor, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Keith.
Before we get to this week's propagation forecast, I want to remind you again about the two DRM tests that we're conducting this Sunday, one targeting Europe and one targeting Southeast and East Asia. From 10:30 to 11:27 UTC, we're going to be broadcasting to Europe using 85 kilowatts. The frequency for that will be 17560 kilohertz. That's 17560 kilohertz. And that's from 10:30 to 11:27 UTC. Then we're going to make a frequency change, and at 11:30 UTC, we'll be on the air to Southeast and East Asia right until 12:27 UTC on the frequency of 15645 kilohertz. That's 15645 kilohertz, also using 85 kilowatts. Just a couple of weeks ago, we did a 10-minute test targeting Southeast and East Asia on that frequency of 15645 kilohertz, and we got pretty good results. In fact, except for a few areas of the region, most of it was copied at 100%. There's a number of YouTube videos that some people posted of that 10-minute transmission, of which you can hear Dan Hensley, including some light music, just for 10 minutes. So do go and check it out. Now, the schedule will be for Europe. You'll be able to hear news and jazz for the asking. For listeners in Southeast and East Asia, after the news will be Switzerland in Sound with Bob Zanotti, and then a new program that we started airing here on PCJ Radio International on October the 5th called Troppi Retro, produced and presented by the very beautiful Calorin Rey at our location in Colombia in Latin America. So do tune into it. For more information, you can find all that stuff at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Well, something extraordinary happened over the last few days. The bands actually opened up, and Dan Hensley, our propagation editor, even updated the propagation forecast information that we have at our website. Well, what can we expect over the next 7 days? Can we expect the same kind of excellent conditions? Well, here he is to tell us more.
Here's propagation for the week from October 12th to October 18th, 2013. The 10.7 centimeter flux will be stable all week long at 105. An A index of 10 on October 12th, dropping down to 8 from October 13th to October 16th. October 17th and 18th, an A index of 5. The KP index is 3 all week long from October 12th to October 16th, dropping down to 2 on October 17th and 18th. As predicted last week, the sun has become active once again, and this time it has been the source of a recent G1 magnetic storm as the result of a coronal mass ejection. 8 new sunspots are observed this week, 1856, 57, and 60 through 65 are what we're watching. Sunspot 1865 poses a risk for M-class flares. See our radio propagation page at www.pcjmedia.com/RPROP for more information. Back to you, Keith.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. If you didn't have time to write that URL down that Dan just gave out, just go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll find a link for it right on the front page at the top. It says radio propagation, which, of course, you can't miss unless you're not looking at your computer screen because it's turned off. And you'll find that rather funny, but not too long ago, we did receive an email from a listener who said, "I can't find anything on your website when I last looked." And then he wrote back saying, "It's because my monitor was turned off." I thought he was kidding, but he was actually serious. We're going to leave you right now. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And let us know how you listen to the program. If it's either on satellite, shortwave, medium wave, FM, or the internet, we'd love to know. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Parent saying so long, take care. We're going to leave you with Charlie Steinman and his orchestra and singers with "Life is Short to Realize." So until next time, 73 and 88 to the ladies.
This is PCJ Radio International.